welcome to Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 18, Trapped, from 2002. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. And boy, oh boy, do we have another stinker on our hands tonight.
Can I just add another oh boy to that? Because it needs it. This was rough.
I was so psyched to finally get Charlize as a mom in this movie, and then the whole point of the movie is that she gets her kid kidnapped. Like, I want Charlize as a mom, I want Cage as a dad, and in all these movies that we've been doing lately, for one reason or another, they are that, but they're also not that.
It was kind of crazy that Dakota Fanning was her daughter in this, like a young Dakota Fanning.
When Joe and I did the War of the Worlds episode for Magic Mike's, she was in that. And she was someone, I think it was MTV, called her the most useless thing to have in an apocalypse.
I think she's
a lot better in this movie. She's younger in this movie.
I think she's younger.
Pretty good in this for being a young kid.
Yeah, she's pretty smart, right? I mean, for having severe asthma, like debilitating asthma the poor child, she actually kind of almost rescues herself at one point in the movie. Yeah, good for her on this.
This movie, and the reason I'm saying this now is because it's going to come back to this, but this movie basically feels like they wanted to make a different movie and then sort of settled. The guy who wrote this wrote a novel that this was based on, and he adapted it himself.
Okay.
And the novel was called 24 Hours, because that's how long Kevin Bacon and his team kidnap people for. Kevin Bacon, by the way, someone that Joe 2 and I have discussed doing as a podcast. I don't think we're going to do it. I think we're just going to write out the Too Fast, Too Forever thing.
Yeah, there's the, you know, classic Kevin Bacon game, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I grew up.
Yeah, we were going to call the podcast The Sixth Degree.
Oh, but I didn't know any of these people he had ever worked with before, so.
No. And, you know, for how many things he's in and for how many podcasts that we've done, for us to finally get to a Kevin Bacon movie, I was like, oh, okay, cool. Okay.
Yeah, that is pretty
Especially
crazy.
One that he has a spiderweb tattoo around his belly button.
Oh, what is that about? That and married to Courtney Love.
Yes, which we will get into in a very big way. The book was called 24 Hours, but they changed it because they didn't want to confuse with the TV show 24.
Oh.
Okay.
You know
so that's
what?
Number one.
That would have been crazy because 15 minutes, 24 hours, she would have had sort of like a trend going.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It was supposed to take place in the South, but then because they filmed, they had to film up north, so they relocated it to the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
So there was that.
Wasn't quite sure where this took place, to be exact. I figured Canada. I figured they just shot.
So there's two clues. In the magazine article that she is profiled in at the beginning, it says something along the lines of, like, meet Portland's most famous textile designer.
Got it.
But then the other thing is that they talk about at the end when they're doing the money transfer, they talk about wiring it to Seattle or something.
Oh.
So I don't think that they, I'm not sure if it's in Oregon or in Washington, but it's somewhere Pacific Northwest-y. Definitely could be confused with Canada, just sort of the nice, serene, wooded Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, with the lakes and the water planes and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you caught in the credits, it was dedicated to Peter Sobieszynski, who was the DP on this film, who died during filming.
Oh, too bad. It's unfortunate. It's also unfortunate that this movie doesn't look too great either. I almost got motion sickness watching this.
Oh, no. The beginning of it is terrible. Oh. Like, I don't know why we have that, like, terrible, cheesy... Like, it looked like Oleg from 15 Minutes was, like, shooting a shitty version of his movie.
That's awesome. No, yeah. It just has, like, the easiest tacked on filter, the all blue and washed out. It is just terrible.
Another really unfortunate thing is that Courtney Love had a miscarriage while filming this movie.
Oh,
so, which is also weird considering that she had a C-section in this movie that they point out, that her kid died in this movie. Like, I can't imagine how stressful and how terrible that must have been for her on set.
I wasn't even aware that she had gotten pregnant a second time. I don't know if that was even in, like, the media or anything like that. I mean, I never really follow Courtney Love's career or anything. I actually think she's quite a good actor, to be honest. She was in that Larry Flint movie. She was really great in that. I remember early on from, like, Sid and Nancy. But my strongest memory of Courtney Love, though, is Lollapalooza 95. me and my friends just booing Hole as loud as we could. Like,
was that in Chicago or was that when it was still touring?
It was still touring, yeah. So we went 93, okay. 4, and 5, and then that was, we kind of had enough at that point. And I just remember, my vivid memory from that year was just booing the band Hole as loud as we could.
Oh, this is the reason that I mentioned this at the beginning here, is because you talk about how Dakota Fanning has asthma in this. Originally, I guess in the book, the daughter has diabetes, but Panic Room came out earlier in 2002. Oh, they're like, man, ooh, can't do that again, so yeah, we're going to make this asthma.
This movie just gets crushed twice, first with the title and then with the character trait there, with the sickness thing. So it can't be called 24, and they have to change the girl's disease.
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels like this whole movie that, like, it wanted to be one thing, but, or it wanted to be a lot of different things, I guess.
It's actually three things. Like, it feels like it's, like, these three short films, like, these actors, like, all pair off into, like, these three little sections, you know? You have Bacon and Charlize, you have Fanning, yep, and then the guy from Constantine.
Taylor Pruitt Vince.
Yeah, who looks like my nephew's second grade teacher, actually. Which is...
Well, that is terrifying.
No, he's a really great guy, though. I mean, I was a little...
I like this actor. So this is what really threw me off before we continue with the three pairings, is that when he first abducts Dakota Fanning, he's in the car on the phone. I'm like, this guy, whoever this is the worst actor I have ever seen. And then they go to the house and he's like, you know, not in a car, not in this cramped environment. And I see his eyeballs twitching the way that they do, like his telltale character trait. I'm like, oh, I know this guy. Like, he was in The Devil's Candy, which is the other Black Phillip movie. Yeah. He's been in a ton of things, but he's always cast as the creepy guy because he's a bigger guy. He can look scary and menacing, and he's got the eye thing. So he always plays these, like, really, you know, I guess depressing, dark roles. But I really like him because he's always good in these things. But I was like, this guy's so terrible. I was like, oh, no, he's not terrible. It's just like, I guess it was like shot weird and edited weird. And I don't know what was going on.
Yeah, and I don't know if they were trying to make him come across as like a simpleton or, you know, below average IQ or anything. Or if just Kevin Bacon is just like an assertive asshole towards him and everything. The guy was just like acting real nervous and stuff. But yeah, I bought him. Especially though, like, I have to bring up this third pair. So Courtney Love is paired up with the dude who plays Charlize's husband. And this dude is like unwatchable, bro. Like,
I have a very important question for you about this guy. So he's an Irish actor. Is he supposed to be Irish in this movie? Because his accent is hard to track.
He may as well be Tommy Wiseau from New Orleans, because, like, I have no idea where he is from. I had no idea what this accent was supposed to be. That's actually, I kind of thought maybe, like, the only thing I could place was, like, French-Canadian, but broken somehow. Like, that's why I was like, maybe this is Canada, because they picked this dude up somewhere. I could not get over him. I just, every time he was on screen.
Terrible.
Maybe the worst guy. Maybe, I'm sorry, dude, but maybe the worst we've seen so far.
I mean, it's real bad. I don't know. His whole storyline doesn't even really make sense. Because, the movie opens, and the three of them, he and Charlize and Dakota, all get to this house, right? Yeah. And it's like, okay, cool, the family's here together. And then he's like, well, I'm leaving, bye, because I just developed this new anesthetic that paralyzes people, apparently. And I'm going to go present it at a conference. Like, why is he there other than to set up the only moment of this movie that I like, which I actually did really like, when he's flying away, because he's a seaplane pilot, apparently, Dakota Fanning's like, waggle the wings, or wiggle the wings, and he says, waggle. And so at the end of the movie, when he's flying the seaplane, we're going to talk about this in a big way, because this is dumbest finale I've ever seen.
Insane.
And it's like, almost good, but it's just so dumb that I didn't enjoy it. But he waggles the wings for her and she smiles. I was like, oh, I like that moment. That's a nice moment. But, like, I don't know why he's in the beginning of the movie other than to establish that he's a pilot and that he has to waggle the wings. Like, there's no other reason for him to be there in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah, and maybe that he's a doctor and married to Charlize. Like, I thought the kidnapping was going to have something to do with this new drug. Like, maybe something about, like, pushing the price up or something somehow, or, I don't know, getting stock.
A real Martin Shkreli situation?
Yeah, but then, dude, you know what this turns out to be? It's a total sacred deer situation. Killing of a Sacred Deer.
It is, yes.
Dude,
well, so I wonder... So Killing of a Sacred Deer is based on a Greek tragedy. I wonder if this is based on the same Greek tragedy, where, like, one doctor kills a patient, and then that doctor has to lose a patient, or lose a kid.
Yeah, like, that's...
I don't know.
I mean, but that just...
That's a good call.
But that begs the question, like, why did they do this to five other doctors? Like, what was the story there? Like, this isn't the only guy that they kidnapped the kid from, you know what I mean? So,
okay, we need to talk about their plan, because it is... So their plan, there's three people on the team. Kevin Bacon and Courtney Love are married, and Taylor Pruitt-Vance is his cousin, I think. And yeah. So they all split up and they do three different things. Taylor Pruitt-Vance watches the kid, Kevin Bacon seduces the wife or handles the wife or whatever, controls the wife, and Courtney Love seduces and then extorts the husband. They don't wear masks because they know they've done this five times apparently. This is the fifth time. They've never had the cops called on them.
Yeah.
And they know that if the cops do get called on them, then they know that it's the person that they're working with now and they're going to go just kill that kid. But I was wondering, so say while in the middle of this movie, the parents of the first kid from 3 years ago were like, you know what? Like, I can't abide this anymore. Like, we're going to call the cops. And, like, they call the cops. They're skipping four other kids. Like, you don't know it's the most recent one. Like, that, like, there's so many things that, like, on the surface kind of make sense about their plan and, like, the way they do things. And you think about it for, like, a minute more, you're like, oh, wait, no, none of that makes any sense.
It was, like, kind of a cool sort of, like, gimmick for me at first, where it was like, oh, they're so efficient, like, they've done this before, and, like, no guns, no one gets hurt, no one gets killed, you know? I wish they established that a little better in the opening sequence. I think that's what that was all supposed to be about. But then it all falls apart when it all gets into the doctor is responsible for killing Kevin Bacon's daughter and Courtney Love's daughter. It's like, why couldn't it just been something about the drug, that they used a drug on her, and, like, it was part of a team of doctors, so, like, it all falls apart. I mean, this whole movie is, like, barely holds itself together halfway through to begin with, but, I mean, that just, it doesn't help that they introduce, like, this super nonsensical thing that doesn't add up.
The drug comes back because he uses that on Courtney Love.
That's he uses it to torture her. Yeah.
Yes.
But, like,
which is terrible. Which, like, is terrible. But we do learn from Killing of Sacred Deer, now that you got that on my brain,
yeah,
that if you ask an anesthesiologist can never kill a patient. A doctor kills a patient. So, you know, if you ask a doctor can't kill a patient, an anesthesiologist can kill a patient. So, I don't know.
I think what this movie, at its core, wanted to be and should have stuck around as is just the one-on-one between Kevin Bacon and Charlize, and keeping the kid as a voice on the phone and keeping the husband as a, like, really, really breaking it down into sort of just like a two-man or a two-person play or something of that nature. Like, the smaller would have been better. They really...
Like a panic room situation.
Yeah, like, again, it's, maybe it was just plagued by too many similarities to recent things at the time, but that doesn't help make it the rest of it feel new or original either. Like, all of this just feels like done before or kind of just stupid. Like, your favorite part that I know you can't wait, I think it's the best part of the movie, the part with the scalpel.
Yes.
For that to be included just like in the middle of the movie is nonsense. I mean, like, the idea that Kevin Bacon needs to sort of like sexually harassed these women, that, like, did you get the sense that he did that to all of the women? Like, he would watch them for 24 hours and then, like, rape them? Like, that was...
I think so, yeah.
Why was that?
It's too dark. And I, because you sort of think... So this is also what's weird, is that, you know, he spends 24 hours, they all spend 24 hours with each other, and yeah. So Kevin Bacon's been with her for 24 hours, and he's an asshole, and he obviously kidnapped the kid, but he's not sexually... He's not putting sexual advances on her.
Yeah, he's all business.
Right. And then the neighbor from next door shows up at midnight because she saw the lights were on.
I forgot.
And then that's when he kind of gets the green light because, like, to sell it to the neighbor that, you know, he's her friend and not, you know, her husband's friend, they kiss. And then from there, it just gets real dark real fast. So I think on the one hand, you could be like, this is the first time this was a weird situation. Because it felt like this is the fifth time they've done it. It seems like they've never had a hiccup before. But now this time, they have the asthma thing.
Yeah.
They have the neighbor thing. It feels like they're running into all sorts of different kinds of hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, okay, how have you never had a problem before and now all the problems are in this one? But, like, so I feel like there's a chance in that regard that he never raped any of the women that he was with before, but at the same time, you're like, oh no, he probably did to all of them.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a really dumb direction to go because I wasn't, like, with him, don't get me wrong, or anything like that, but he wasn't an unredeemable dude yet, you know
right.
What I mean? Like if he wasn't doing all of this, like, stupid, creepy, sexy sex stuff with Charlize and everything, like, I would have empathize with him when you find out about his daughter.
He's a cool bad guy. Yeah. He's a cool bad guy with motive.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, dude, why did you have to go there? I didn't. I mean, that was just too. That was just like crossing the line. And you know what else pissed me off? That neighbor never returned. Right? The neighbor never shows back up. She never tries to save the day and gets killed. Like, of all the, you know, this movie is supposed to be about, like, everything going wrong. So, like, bring her back. Yeah, we get, like, this, like, oh, man, this scene is so stupid. Where, like, Charlize knows that she's going to get assaulted. So she tries to, like, take charge of the situation. And then she hides a scalpel in her underwear?
Between her butt cheeks. Yeah, between her butt cheeks and her underwear. So Kevin Bacon starts to take off her clothes, and she's like, no. He's like, what, are you shy? And there's so much casual sexism in this movie. Like, here, he says, how could a woman who looks like you be shy? And so she goes to the bathroom and, like, starts to get undressed, and he, like, immediately opens the door. He's like, hey, everything okay in here? And she's like, yeah. And he leaves, and then she takes a scalpel and slides it between her butt cheeks in her underwear. And so she walks out in underwear and shirt. Thankfully, for as sexist and demeaning as this movie is, does not get naked in this movie, which is at least sort of a step in the right direction, even though she's raped, so it's not a step in the right direction. But he starts to, like, kiss her body and, like, feel her, and, like, he's sliding his hands down her back, and, like, he's about to get to her butt and, like, feel the scalpel, and she, like, has to maneuver him and then take control. And that's when she goes down on him and then pulls the scalpel out to, like, cut off his balls, to literally cut off his balls. And I was like, this is such a cool kind of idea if it wasn't happening in a scene where she was getting raped. Like, it's just like, it's this moment of empowerment, sort of, out of the worst part of the movie.
Yeah, like, if it was just in a better movie, like, I feel it would have worked. Like, there's just no impact. It came across to me as just silly, to be quite honest. Like, I mean, I was like, how did she not cut her ass with that scalpel as she's moving around and everything like that? Like, it took her forever to sort of, like, get it out and turn it around and, like, fumble with it. I thought that was kind of funny. And the whole situation, it's, like, weird and tense, and, like, I've never really seen that where she's, like, taking control back by, you know, she's literally, like, gonna shave it right off, and, like, just the thought of that is making me, like, lose blood. Like, I'm just getting a little queasy about it.
But this also makes no sense, because the whole plan, and this is what this is, like, the whole movie is like this.
Yeah,
but the
plan
is that Kevin Bacon calls Taylor Prude Vince every 30 minutes, and if he doesn't call, he's supposed to kill the kid.
Yeah.
And so she cuts the balls off. He's supposed to then just give her the kid back?
That's the thing.
Like,
is
how,
like,
does that work?
Yeah, and she ends up relinquishing anyway, right? Like, she ends up, well, she's kind of accidentally, like, not, maybe not accidentally, but she slices, like, his leg a little bit, and they sort of have, like, a little chase around the house, and finally she just gives the scalpel back, or, like, gives it up to him, because, yeah, exactly what you said. Like, there's all these moments where it's like, he's like, I thought I told you I was gonna, you know, like, he doesn't say this exactly, but, like, the scene basically ends, like, 3 or 4 or 5 times in this movie where it's like, I thought I told you I was gonna kill your daughter if you tried to pull some shit. Like, why'd you pull some shit? And there's, like, 5 scenes like that. Like, that's the whole movie. It's like, dude, just give the order. Like, this movie should have been over in, like, 45 minutes because of all the shit these people are trying to pull.
Well, that's the weirdest thing, is that we've talked a lot on here, and we keep bringing it up, about how, like, things should happen faster or slower. I feel like there's just constant problem. Like, the pacing of this is all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seems like it's happening too fast and too slow. Like, it just, like, nothing really aligns with each other. And I think that's because there's the 3 different stories going on.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's sort of splintering too much. And then we get to the end, and, like, there's the big chase, and then the movie literally ends within a minute of the chase. It's just like, oh, huh.
Dude.
Okay.
That chase is like a scene out of Knowing with Cage, where it's just like pandemonium on the freeway. Like a plane is crashing into, like, a bus is crashing into, like, like, there's a pileup on the freeway. I'm like, what movie is this? Like, what are we ending on? Like, this is so baffling. Like, it's, this movie is another one of those sort of tone deaf masterpieces that just never really gets its groove or establishes its mood properly, and the more serious it tries to be, like, the less it succeeds. Like, I think Charlize is really doing a strong job, but she's in the wrong movie. Like, she's playing a hysterical mother, but this is just, I think this is supposed to be more of like a campy tongue-in-cheek kind of thing, and everybody is playing it like super dramatic and seriously.
The other problem is that she's supposed to be the hero and she's not. The husband's the hero.
Yeah. What's
like,
that
she's
about?
Supposed to be the one who saves the kid, and then the husband literally swoops in on a plane and saves the kid. Dude, what?
This husband's a maniac, too, by the way. Kevin Bacon dropped some line about how, like, he might not even be the father of this kid or something.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I don't know what that was all about, but like, when the husband gets Courtney Love, like, alone in the room, injects her with that drug and, like, almost doesn't revive her, and, like, he is a cold-blooded bastard, this guy, like... dark, twisted, like maybe even worse than Kevin Bacon if he needed to sort of like struggle to survive. Like if he really, you know, if he was like really rock bottom, like I cannot imagine the kinds of things this guy would do to survive. It is a shock to me. Like I like they've lost me with him halfway through. I was like, I hope he dies or they get a divorce because I don't like this character. I don't like him being around little Dakota Fanning or around Charlize or anything. And then they make him the hero, basically, which really bothered me.
And then presumably they're all going to leave this movie and have a happy ending together. That Kevin Bacon's dead, Courtney Love gets arrested, Taylor Pruitt-Vince is just off in the woods, I guess. And then the three of them are all okay and they're just going to like be fine together? Like, what?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're going to have a lot of therapy. They stay together. This is going to...
Oh, definitely.
This is going to be a rough one for them as a family to keep it going. Like lots of nightmares, lots of I don't know if they're gonna survive this one.
We just got lucky that this movie was on HBO Go. We're recording this 2 days before it gets pulled from HBO Go. Like if I had to like pay for this or like find another way to watch it, like I would have been so disappointed. The fact that I could just like easily stream it was fine, man. Like we just caught it in time. There is one thing I want to go back and watch though, because I was looking at the trivia. And apparently, during the final crash scene, which I still want to talk about the plans of that, Charlize... Okay, no, hold on. Before we get here, we need to talk about this.
Okay.
So I don't understand the handoff plan. The husband and Courtney Love are basically intercepted by the FBI, who try to convince him that they're going to help.
Yeah.
And he's like, no. We're fine. We're going to get this. But they're still tracking him. They're in a helicopter. Meanwhile, Charlize and Kevin Bacon are in a parking garage, and he knocks out a woman, stuffs her in her trunk, and steals her car.
Yeah, and in the accident, someone opens the trunk after the accident. She like tumbles out, runs away.
And so they're in a car. Taylor Vince Pruitt is in a car with Dakota Fanning, and they're driving. They're all sort of converging this one place. Meanwhile, the husband and Courtney Love are on a seaplane that, like, there's another, I guess, kind of cool moment, but it's also, like, not really as tense as it should be because they're not going to die. They're in the plane, and they get a call. He's like,
oh,
I need to kill the engine, otherwise they're going to know.
That was so
turns
dumb.
Off the engine, answers a phone call. Luckily, the phone call is, like, 8 seconds long, and then turns the engine back on and, like, sort of swoops back up. Like, it's a cool idea that I've never seen in another movie, but that might be because it's a dumb idea.
Dude, and they do it twice. In a row. Like, it happens, like, right after, right again. That, to me, felt, like, written into a corner situation, where it's like, oh, shit, like, this draft is due. Like, I'm all the way at the end here. We're right about at the last scene. Like, they're in the plane, and I have to have these characters call them, and they can't know that they're not at this hotel. Like, what else can I do? There's nothing else you can do. And, like, the first time, I was like, ooh, that's, yeah, like, that is really kind of crazy, like, if that had that. But then, when it happened twice, I was like, this is just... The guy, like, he couldn't help himself. I was like, this is unacceptable.
But what's even dumber than that is his plan, which is apparently to waggle the plane, let Dakota know it's him, and then land the plane on a busy highway, causing everyone to slam on their brakes. And then we have Chekhov's lumber truck, where the fact that the logs didn't get strewn about the highway, I was like, how do you show a lumber truck and not have the lumber, like, go everywhere? Like, it's just, it's basically any other kind of truck at that point.
Yeah, why make it the lumber truck, exactly?
But he lands the plane, Taylor Vince, whatever his name is, the guy, the kidnapper, slams on his brakes, careens off the road into a rock. So the plan, the dad's plan, got his daughter into a head-on collision with a truck, an old truck, probably not a very safe truck, and a rock on the side of the highway. Then they have to duck out of the way It almost kills him. The logs almost kill him and Courtney Love.
This couldn't end, like, worse for anyone, you know? Like, this is the worst plan.
And it also sends Kevin Bacon and Charlize off the highway. She had already knocked him off the highway. They come back.
That's right.
But then they careen off the highway, and the car lands upside down. Charlize lets the woman out of the trunk. She falls to the ground holding a tire iron. She's like, don't hurt me, don't hurt me. Charlize takes the tire iron, doesn't use the tire iron, finds a gun, seems so overwhelmed at this moment, then shoots and kills Kevin Bacon. It's like, this is the dumbest climax. Like, there's all the pieces here. If you told me, you're like, hey, so there's two cars in a chase, there's a plane, the plane's gonna land on the highway, there's gonna be an explosion and gunfire. Like, that's all the pieces you need to make a cool scene. And, like, nothing about this is cool.
I would have been like, oh, you mean that happens, like, all throughout the movie? Like, at different times, and it builds to, like, the big part? And it's like, no, it happens in, like, the last 5 minutes of the movie. Like, all in a row, like, like, right after the other. It is just so ridiculous. Like, this is not an action movie until then, either. Like, there's no precedent for this type of explosions or accidents or anything. Like, the most action is just, like, people kind of getting slapped in the face, pretty much.
Yep.
It, you know, like, it's not like car chases and running through buildings and jumping off of rooftops or any of that stuff. So this just all comes way out of left field, and it is so jarring. It's just like, oh, I'm just like, everyone's just gonna die at the end? Is that what's happening? Like, the dad's gonna crash the plane on the road and just cause everyone to die, and that is almost what happens.
The weirdest thing is that as I was watching this movie and bored by this movie, because not only, like, it sounds like a lot of crazy things happen, but this movie is oppressively slow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the pacing is terrible. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at trivia while I was watching the movie, and I was copying into Word into my note document. There's like 8 little bits of trivia, most of which I've covered. Then there's a spoiler trivia, and I didn't read that because I was like, even though I don't like this movie, I don't want to have it spoiled. But, like, I caught the beginning of the spoiler thing, and it says during the climactic car chase, and I'm like, how the fuck is this movie going to get to a car chase?
That is the perfect response to that.
I'm watching this movie, and there's no reason for this to end in a car chase, and yet it does. Here we are.
They even almost give it a moment to spawn, like, a possibility of a car chase. Like, there's one thing this movie does that I don't think I've seen in a kidnapping movie before, which is that the guy takes Charlize to see her daughter, like, in the middle of the kidnapping.
Yeah.
They, like, don't try and make a fucking break for it. Like, even, like, they leave her alone, like, by the side of one of the cars, like, running.
Yeah.
They don't try and make a break for it. Like, that was so ridiculous to me. Like, they should have gotten into a car chase.
What's even weirder is that Dakota Fanning escapes. Like, she straight up
yeah,
escapes.
She
like,
does.
20 minutes later.
With the phone.
Like, she just, like, she tricks him with the phone, and then she's just out of there. That nothing comes of that.
No,
like,
he catches her because,
I
like,
know, but, like, only it doesn't become anything. Like, just,
exactly. Yeah, she likes running around. She's on the phone with Charlize. She's like, I don't know where I am. Charlize is like, hang up and call 911. She, like, hangs up, and then the guy, like, kind of grabs her, is, like, grabbing her through the bushes or something. So, like, she tried, though. Like, she at least she got close. I don't know. There was also that one really weird part where the dude almost kills her, I guess, was the thing. Like,
oh, because there he's on the phone. Like, so that's another thing. Like, so he's supposed to call every 30 minutes. I was like, so hold on. In 5 times you've done this, he's never been late on a phone call. This is the first time he's, like, almost late. How is this possible?
Just have him call, like, every hour or every 2 hours. Like, that is way too much communication.
Yeah,
like,
you, a lot of phone calls.
Yeah, like, that's going to show up somewhere on, like, you know, if anyone's watching activity or something, like, oh, there's been 4 kidnappings recently. Like, maybe we should check the area and, like, the cell signals or whatever and, like, see if anything comes up. That was totally ridiculous. But, like, in that shot, though, I guess he had, like, I didn't realize it, but he had his arms around her head like he was gonna snap her neck. Like, that's how he was gonna kill her?
Strangle her, yeah. Something like that, yeah.
That's not, like, I mean, if you gotta do it, that's not peaceful or pleasant, or, you know, that's not going out quickly. That just seems, like, brutal.
And what's weird is that they've bonded. Like, they're friends. Like,
yeah.
He, like, you know, he, yeah. It's never really implied that he's, like, slow, But you kind of get that sense a little bit. Like, you know, your job is to not do anything, and not do any of the heavy lifting. You're just going to babysit the kid. But they become, like, friends, and I think they even, like, come up with a plan to, like, escape together or something?
Well, there's definitely some Stockholm Syndrome going on there. There's some going on with Courtney Love also, you know? Like,
yes.
She comes on to Terrible Acting Guy. We find out she's got, like, those bruises all over her body, but, like, we never learn if Kevin Bacon did that intent, like,
probably,
well,
right?
Well, like, we know that Kevin Bacon did it, but we don't find out if it's because she wanted him, like, she's into that or not. Like, it's just never really discussed, but she ends up turning on him and helping the doctor.
Yeah.
Like, the doctor's like, you gotta convince... Somehow, this is kind of incredible, actually. Like, I don't know if I've seen this in a kidnapping movie either. If I have, it's been a long time, but when, like, the guy, like, convinces one of the people that, like, they're not the guy they're looking for, and to, like, kind of help them and get them out of the situation. Like, I'm not sure if I've ever seen that done. It's just...
Wait, maybe I missed that. What was that?
So, he turns Courtney Love, basically, to help him. He basically tells her, like, I'm not the guy that killed your daughter. It was, like, it was Craig. Craig did it. Like, it was him, not me. Like, I wasn't on call
that day.
Oh, yeah,
she believes him.
Yeah, she believes him. Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm saying, like, I don't think I've really seen that before in a kidnapping film. Like, this movie has good ideas, but the execution is just incredibly flawed.
Courtney Love is, like, accusing him of not resuscitating her right, but she just bled out. Like, it was just, like, uncontrollable. Like, I guess it wasn't his fault. Like, I guess he's the anesthesiologist and just some other guy. Like, you know, he is the other guy to Colin Farrell, basically. Like, you know, and Colin Farrell in this movie, essentially, the off-screen Colin Farrell killed the daughter. And she's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like, not angry the entire team, just like, oh, I accept. Like, that is weird. Like, I didn't think about it like that, but yeah, that's weird. That's real weird.
And then it's almost like she has this epiphany, like, oh, we've done this four times. Like, I've got to atone. Like,
so they're doing it for every doctor's kid?
I don't know.
Do they say that or no? Because I just realized that. Like, is that what they're doing?
No, I don't know. Like, halfway through the movie, Charlize finds out, like, this is about something personal with you. Like, and texts, like, he either worked at a hospital or something about the hospital.
Well, yeah, because when the neighbor comes over, he's like, I know him from this hospital. And she's like, oh, he hasn't worked here in years. And Charlize covers for him and saying, like, he's not his friend. He's my friend. And so, but that's how she knows that he knows her, or he knows the doctor from the hospital, from that specific, like, you know, from the old hospital. So that's when he's able to place the daughter in the picture, blah, 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 blah. But is the plan that they're doing to get back at the entire team? No, it can't be. Because they're trying to get rich, and then their plan here, I think, is just to keep the kid.
Like, well, no, that's like plan B.
They're going to be the new Abby. That's plan B, okay.
It's like, at the end, Kevin Bacon's losing it, and he's like, oh, we're just gonna start over, we're stealing the kid, like, you know, plan B, like, let's go. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they never explain any reasoning behind the previous kidnappings. It all comes across as, like, dry runs. Right. Like, it's like, we did it.
That's what it seems like. Yeah,
we,
like,
did it four times to get good at it for the actual, now it's the day of.
What's also weird is that the movie starts, Kevin Bacon's in the car with the woman, and I was like, did he kidnap her or her kid? Because he's like, yeah, the kid's right up there, like, go find him. And but, like, she's, like, panicked. I'm like, what is their plan? And then we find out the plan. I'm like, I guess that makes sense.
It's kind of like a double kidnapping, I guess.
Kind of. It's like a kidnapping and an abduction or whatever. I don't know.
I mean, I think, like I mentioned in my Letterboxd review, you just do it trespass style. Like, you just get the whole family in the room and keep them there until you get what you want. You know, you just huddle everybody. You know, we're camping in tonight. Like, you know, break out the marshmallows because no one's going anywhere. If everybody's together, you can keep track of everyone, and none of this convoluted nonsense needs to get in the way. Although, that didn't stop Trespass from being nonsensical and convoluted, but it was more
but
fun.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's just fun. There's a lot more, like, I don't know, there's a lot more tension in that movie, and there's just more chemistry in that movie, I guess. It's more charged. There's more, like, electricity in that. Everybody's going wild in that movie. Everyone in this movie just kind of feels like halfway there, except for Charlize, who's just going way hard in this one. But lovingly. I love what she's doing, but she's kind of going over the top from time to time.
But she's not enough over the top to be fun. She's just like...
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like serious. She's like being seriously dramatically, like, this was, you know, a better movie yeah, it's like too good for this. It's not fitting.
You know what's maybe the weirdest thing about this movie? Not this movie necessarily, but the plot, is that 2 years later, Dakota Fanning gets kidnapped again in a much better movie, Man on Fire.
Oh, I gotta check that out. I like her as an actor a lot.
Wait, you haven't seen Man on Fire?
No. That's the Denzel
with
one,
Denzel?
Right? No.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's maybe my favorite Denzel movie.
Uh-oh. Writing it down. Man on Fire.
And it's a Tony Scott movie. So before R.I.P. Tony Scott.
I like... Have you ever seen Push with her and Chris Evans, where they're kind of like mutants, sort of, and...
No.
And it's pretty cool. It's like a weird Matrix wannabe, but like it actually works pretty well. She's good in it. She's good in everything, actually.
Have I liked her? No, she's not good in War of the Worlds.
Well, that's just a terrible movie. I like Tom Cruise. I don't even think he's good in that. Poor Spielberg. What happened?
I want to see here. Have I liked Dakota Fanning in things?
You want to hear a really crazy thing that that I couldn't get out of my head while watching this movie? And I don't think anybody would have picked up on this, to be quite honest with you, but I couldn't get it out of my mind. Charlize, they're the Jennings, I guess, is their last name.
Yeah.
So her husband is Dr. Jennings.
Yep.
Dr. Jennings is the name of the scientist in the movie Howard the Duck that gets turned into the Dark Overlord. And I just watched that movie like a couple weeks ago. And so like I heard Dr. Jennings, and I couldn't get like the Howard's voice out of my head the entire movie. So I don't know if that helped or hurt or what.
Probably indifferent to this. You were never going to like this movie no matter what, whether or not you had Howard the Duck in your head. I like Dakota Fanning in Man on Fire. I like her as... I like Coraline, and she's apparently the voice of Coraline.
Oh, that
And I really
cool.
like her in Very Good Girls with Elizabeth Olsen. But compare it to her sister, who's in Demon,
Super
8. In
that,
Super
that
8. What
that
was that other movie that came out
Super
last year?
8.
She's in The Beguiled, which is great. She's in 20th Century Women.
Yeah,
20th
yeah.
Century Women is what I'm thinking of. Yeah,
me
yeah,
too.
Yeah. She's also in Live by Night, the Ben Affleck movie that we're not going to cover.
Oh, I saw that
Trumbo.
In theaters.
Like, Elle Fanning is in so many good things. And her sister, I guess, sort of like... I think now she might... Oh, she's also in Somewhere, the really early Sofia Coppola movie. I guess, like, Dakota was supposed to be, like, this, like, wunderkind, right? Like, she was supposed to come out of nowhere and, like, be, like, this, like, next great thing. And then didn't really do much outside of being a child actress. And now she was in the lead of that miniseries, The Alienist, on TNT, which I didn't get very far into. Because we were watching The Nick at the same time, and I was like, The Nick is better. So go listen to that on Cinemakers,
right.
If it's out yet. I don't know when this comes out. It's coming out around this time, I think. It actually might be out the same week? I don't know. Go watch The Nick and then listen to our Nick episodes. Dakota Fanning is supposed to be like this like superstar, and then like Elle Fanning's like, nope, that's me.
Yeah. No, right. She kind of paved the way. It's interesting. Like, I remember Dakota Fanning kind of like appeared on a talk show like a year ago or something. I think I saw her on like Kimmel, and she just looked like incredibly different. You know, she's just not a child anymore. She's like an actual woman now and everything. So, I mean, she just has an entire different look going on. And I don't know. I saw her actually. I watched this movie she was in about a week ago called Please Stand By, where she plays like a sort of semi-autistic girl who's obsessed with Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That's like a new release, sort of,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and she's great, and I mean, the movie's good, you know, it's like, you know, 3 stars, it's wholesome, it's got a good heart to it, but it's nothing, like, incredible, but I liked it, because I'm a huge Star Trek fan, but she's great in it, so it was nice to see her do something new, and still doing features, and it's got a good supporting cast in there, but yeah, her sister is just, like, incredible. I'm sorry, it's like, I thought Dakota Fanning was, like, a good actress, but then it's like, her sister's, like, a great actor, it's like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yep.
That one scene in Super 8, I still can't get that out of my head, where they, like, do sort of, like, they're at the train station at night, and they do, like, the test, and it's, like, incredible. And then they're like, okay, now to do the actual take, and it's just not as good.
The only other note that I have about this movie is what I was actually leading up to, that bit of trivia about the car chase, and this is something Charlize,
okay.
That when Charlize releases the woman from the trunk... and then runs up the embankment toward the road, you can see that like she sort of slips, which I didn't see, which I kind of want to go back and see. And according to the director's DVD commentary, Charlize really hurt her knee and was basically forced herself to crawl the rest of the way to finish the scene.
Whoa.
But once cut was yelled, it was realized how seriously her knee had been hurt, and filming was delayed briefly while she was hospitalized.
Whoa.
That was like a crazy, like, I didn't know about that. I mean, not that we ever would for any reason, but like fighting through the pain, like, you know, she goes to the hospital, comes back and finishes this terrible movie, but like, damn.
Yeah, I just wish she had put herself at risk for something better. It's like, it's so unfortunate, but it's just great that she doesn't care what she's working on. She's just gonna do it with everything she's got. She's gonna give it. You just never know either. You never know. This movie got crazy at the end there, dude. I mean, like, the final shot is just like panning out of this destruction in the freeway. I couldn't believe where we ended up in this movie. You know, I was really glad we didn't have a guest for this episode. I would have felt so bad for them.
I think I have it out of 18, like 13 or 14. Like, there's a handful of movies that I like less than this. Like, both Woody Allen movies. Like, I'm not going to rewatch this, but I would rewatch this over a handful of other movies. You know what I mean? Like, it's not good by any stretch of the imagination, and it's sexist, and it's slow, and it's not well made, and it's sort of illogical. But at the same time, I have below it Astronaut's Wife. It's sort of on par with that, I think. It's like another one of those, like, terrible acting by the husband. Charlie's kind of as a mom, sort of trying to figure things out. Not good.
Yeah.
15 minutes I have below this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I feel like if Kevin Bacon wasn't in this, it would be in, like, best of the worst territory. But, like, he, because he's in it, he's, like, too prestige. He kind of makes it, it's too close to, like, the borderline now. And I'm trying to take it as something more. So, like, you can't have 2 to 2.5 stars Charlize Bacon in Love and then pull a 15. It won't work. Like, 15 minutes basically had De Niro. So, like, it worked as, like, a best of the worst thing.
And I have 15 minutes below it. I have both Woody Allen movies and I have Hollywood Confidential. So there are 5 things that I'd rather watch less than this. And this is a movie that I pretty much hated.
Yeah, I pretty much hated it. I was able to at least, like, towards the end, I at least felt like I was, like, losing my mind and started laughing uncontrollably at, like, all the turns of events that just started happening, like the carjacking out of nowhere, and then, like, all the stuff with the airplane falling when they had to turn the plane off because the phone was on. Like, oh my god, like, where was all this stuff? Like, why couldn't they just parse this out throughout the entire movie? Like, I don't know why we were doing so many phone tag games and all of this chasing around the house in our underwear bullshit. Like, the guy had some good ideas here. I mean, I'm not saying that this book is gonna make, you know, book club or anything like that, but I imagine, like, there was enough there to try and make something compelling, and somewhere in the execution, it just failed.
I don't know where it failed, but it failed pretty much probably the entire way through the execution. Like, just nothing about this good. Cannot recommend this in any way. Oh, I do actually have one other note. This is something that you actually brought up to me a few weeks ago when we did some Cage Club Revisited that I didn't know about, was that this was the first movie to come out after she broke up her 3-year relationship with the lead singer of Third Eye Blind.
Oh, okay.
This I copied this verbatim from IMDb because it's the dumbest written trivia. It's the least helpful. Like, all the trivia on IMDb is ranked as, like, do you find this interesting? Yes or no? And, like, the ones that have a higher percentage go to the top, and the ones that don't go to the bottom. This was the last one on the list, so the least helpful, least interesting, whatever. It says, Theron's first movie release after her 3-year relationship with Third Eye Blind's lead singer Stephen Jenkins. Jenkins has gone on to make millions of dollars writing songs about their failed relationship. Like, that's such a weird, blunt way to say that. Like, hey, you know how, like, that didn't work out? Well, he went to go make millions of dollars about it. Like, okay, sure.
And she didn't make a single movie about their relationship, so...
No.
I wonder if he saw the Keanu movie and was just like, I can't compete with that. Like, I have to give this up. Like, what am I thinking? I'm a fool to think that I could that I deserve this. Yeah, but that is really funny. Like, we don't really delve into the personal lives of our subjects here too much, but
right.
My friend Dana sent me that link in Facebook, so if she's listening, thank you, Dana, for that. Oh, one other thing on that subject, though, about sort of personal history of Theron. She shoots, not her dad, but she shoots a dad dead in this movie. So there's a little bit of sort of, like, reflection about how, you know, her mother had to take matters into her own hands when she was a child. So there's some of that coming out in this movie. I think we got a little bit of that once before, too, where she shot some father figure or something, but I can't quite recall.
That's all I got, too. So let's get on to the game, the sequel game, Trapped 2, Still Trapped.
Oh, man.
We are winding down this game. We are... So here's a question for you.
Okay.
Before I look at what number I got, what it means, I was thinking... Instead of each doing one, do you want to do one together?
Oh.
Like, come up with a joint pitch for the next movie?
I suppose we could do that. This time would be good because we don't have a guest.
Yes.
Okay.
And then if it works well, the next two movies, we can do it with the guest, too.
Okay.
So we have number 6. What's number 6? It's not one of the fun ones, I don't think. Oh, it is one of the fun ones. It's horror slasher.
Uh-oh.
So, okay. Trapped 2, Still Trapped, or Trapped Again, or Trapped Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of almost a horror movie. I mean, it's a thriller.
I know, yeah.
But how would we do Trapped 2 as a horror movie?
Hmm.
I think you got to go with Taylor Pruitt-Vince, right? He's escaped. He's on the loose.
Yeah, that's right. He's still out there.
So it's got to focus on him. Oh. Maybe wanting revenge. Maybe, okay, so here's where I'm thinking we start. We have Taylor Pruitt-Vince off in his hotel room or shack or whatever, wherever he's living, some slummy place. He has just pictures and pictures and pictures of Dakota Fanning. Like, after this whole ordeal goes down, every newspaper talks about it. They have pictures of the family. He becomes obsessed with her. Exactly. And so we see him. I guess it's kind of like a prisoner situation, which is a movie that I don't remember anything about because it's like the most depressing 2.5 hours of my life, and I don't want to think about it again.
Paul Dano gets like trapped under a car, like in a hole or something. I don't know.
He's in that movie, and there's a hole. I don't remember if he gets trapped in it or not. But it is another Villeneuve movie with Jake Gyllenhaal, so go check it out. So he's obsessed with Dakota Fanning, and he... I guess this is also kind of the devil's candy. And he wants to abduct her, and I don't know where the horror comes
okay,
in, because again, this is thriller.
I got an idea.
How do we put a horror bent on
okay,
this? Go ahead.
How about... Okay, so we set it up that, like, he is this obsessive guy. He's going to go back after her. He's researching the family. He's, like, tracked them down. It turns out that, like, he doesn't necessarily want to hurt her. He's just think that he's gonna help her. So like he goes, like he tracks them down and he's like, yeah, come with me, like I'm gonna help you. But then the dad is like, holy shit, like you're the guy from before. And like the dad knocks him out, and the dude wakes up like in the dad's sort of rumpus room in the basement, like tied to a chair. And he's like, okay, gonna go to town on him, and he's got like the injection, and he's gonna do the whole thing where he like makes him go not feel anything, and then revives him and everything. But Charlize shows up and is like, what are you doing? You're taking it too far. And maybe she tries to help the dude escape from the husband. Like, the husband's, like, really Whoa. Lost it now. And then they...
It's a surprise bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we think we're kind of on his side. And then he really, like, the other guy's, like, really is sort of just wants to help. And he's like, I thought I could help. Like, I'm sorry. I want to atone or something. And the dad's like, too late. And I don't know. Are we getting somewhere?
How does it end, though? Does Charlize... she help him escape? Or I feel like somebody's gotta die, like one of the three has to
yeah,
die.
Oh yeah, yeah, I feel like everybody but Dakota Fanning dies. Like I almost feel like it's gotta
okay.
be yeah sort of gets to that point. If we're gonna go sort of full slasher, she sort of
she's the final girl,
and maybe in the last scene we do a sort of hint that she's been traumatized to the point where the breaking point, and like if there's ever a third one, like she's out there and questionable whether or not she's now like insane and it's gonna like kill or something, you know, or like kidnap, or who knows, like now she's been turned into a monster.
I don't know. I like it.
All right.
Still trapped again, trapped in the basement?
Trapped in the closet? No.
Trapped in the closet?
I like still trapped.
Still trapped.
You sort of set that one up, I maybe knocked it down. That kind of worked.
Yep.
That worked out.
I think it works well. I think just because, like, man, it is difficult to pitch sequels to movies that are just straight up bullshit. Like, it's tough. We also need to figure out the next game we're going to do, because we only have 2 more episodes of sequel game. I don't want to go back to Hollywood Tycoon. I'm still not ready to go back to that.
Me neither.
I'm already tired of this game, but we need to come up with something else.
Oof, man, I can't tell you, like, I was so pumped for this game, and, like, I feel like I've just was like blank. I was just like the on the spot aspect of it really sort of caught me off guard, yeah. And I feel like I fumbled every time we started playing this, but that's part of the fun too. I feel like, at least maybe for listeners, they can hear me sweat over the air.
Okay, so the last thing we have to do on the show is the awards. I'm going to nominate this for worst film.
Mm-hmm.
I nominated it for most sexist film.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got to nominate the husband, whatever. What's his actual name? IMDb trapped.
The actual actor?
Stuart Townsend as Will Jennings.
It's so, those are two pretty lame names, like, for the actor and for the character. That poor guy.
Anything else about this movie? Like, I looked at the categories, and, like, you know, there's nothing else really of note that I saw, but maybe I missed something.
I almost wanted to nominate Dakota Fanning as, like, a strong female presence that we haven't, you know, because we've had so many few and far between, and I just feel like Courtney Love is on the wrong side of the law in this one, and I don't know, she as good an actor as I think she is, she kind of halfway through this, just, I think it's just the character just falls apart completely. Like, when she makes that change to believing the guy, like, she's not good anymore.
I think when she gets in the bathtub, I was just like, oh, this is a weird turn. Like, she's still, like, in this, like, she's still trying to seduce him, even though, like, she's made it clear that she's on the other side of things. Like, what is happening here?
Yeah, I liked like when her hair was just falling over one side of her face and she looked like all noir and everything. And I was like, oh, this is going to go somewhere. And then I was like, oh, I don't like where this goes at all. This goes in the bad place.
Is there anything else that we should nominate this for? Because I don't know. There's no dance scene. Do we have a best kill? I think we do have a best kill.
I mean...
Do we or do we not? No, we don't.
I wish there was some way... Like most chaos at the end of a movie or something, like craziest conclusion.
Well, we had for Cage, we had strangest ending, which was Birdie, remember?
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember other movies had the weird ending. Have we had other weird endings or no?
Not so much.
I can't think of really other weird endings.
No, but there's been lots of crazy climaxes. If you remember, like Children of the Corn 3, Urban Harvest had a really crazy climax with the pumpkin monster or whatever the hell, the corn.
Oh,
the
and then we could
monster.
Also do the Mighty Joe Young car chase.
Oh my
in the
god!
City.
Yeah, and Mighty Joe Young freaking murders the safari dude. He like throws him at the big Ferris wheel and it like crushes every bone in his body.
Craziest ending to a movie. We have Trapped, car chase, ... with a plane. we have Mighty Joe Young.
Rampage through town, basically. Yeah.
Electrocution, Children of the Corn 3.
Crazy
Urban Harvest.
Crazy corn monster thing. And it's just like a massacre. Kids are dropping left and right in the end of that movie. It's nuts.
Devil's Advocate. I mean, she's not involved, but like...
Yeah, no.
Keanu versus Pacino.
Capital D at the end of that movie. Down.
I'm looking if there's anything else.
Like, you know, I think that's good. It's got to be like a lot at once. Like, something like...
Reindeer Games.
Oh, yes. Yes. Perfect example. I think that's good.
Charlize... pinned to a car that goes off a cliff.
And then even before that, like the whole sort of 5 to 10 minutes at the end of that movie is just a nonstop, like, what the hell, what is going on?
15 minutes has a kind of a crazy ending?
What was
or
the
not
ending
really?
Of that again? I don't even remember.
It's when they're De Niro on the dies. Court steps.
Oh, no.
he's like, you know, my client is innocent, and then what's-his-face shoots him. Oh, no, hold on, sorry. Astronaut's wife, for sure, though.
Yeah, because that kind of goes and goes.
Electrocutes. Johnny Depp
becomes the alien. And then gives birth to alien twins. Yeah, like, it's so much happens, like we're right about to get out of our seats, and it's, like, all this new information. And it's like, come on, we're about to leave.
We've got 6 strong candidates there, and, like, that not even counting, like, Sweet November, where she just, like, blindfolds Keanu and leaves him on a bridge. Or, like, other movies that are sort of, like, second-tier kind of crazy. You know, Cider House Rules, where Michael Caine overdoses. Like, these are 6 sort of dumb... big action, weird, sort of out of nowhere finales to movies that otherwise sort of don't deserve. Like,
I think that's
the
it.
Mighty
like,
Joe Young, it works, but it also like doesn't feel like the rest of the movie at all. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like now we're just like, we need a third act action scene.
Yeah, like, you could see Michael Caine was gonna OD on ether from the first scene of that movie.
Right.
So, like, this has to be sort of, like, against the tone of the entire movie. It's like, we get to the end, and it becomes a completely different thing altogether.
Now, is this movie, should we nominate this for most wildly inconsistent tone? I feel like no. Mm. Well, or maybe. Because I feel like it's always kind of just dumb.
Yeah, I don't feel like it ever catches a second groove, really. I think it just is flat. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it just misses its mark and stays there as opposed to, like, shifting around any... You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
There's not, like, a 10-minute stretch of this movie that is just, like, supposed to be a comedy, you know, and then go back to, like, the thriller part or something.
We don't nominate her for, like, best or worst or most wasted role, right? Like, she's just sort of fine. Like, she's above average in this movie, but she's not... It's nothing special or...
No, she's, like, the lead of this movie, too, basically.
Oh! That's what I forgot to say. Like, this is the first time she's top billed in the credits.
There you go. Again, too bad it has to be this, but, I mean, she does, you know... I basically finished it because she was in it. Like, she, you know, I knew that she was in the whole movie, that she was the lead and carrying it, so
yep.
I'm put in the watch time.
And that's also annoying, that she's top billed in the movie and she doesn't even get to be the hero. Like, mm-hmm. it's...
Especially since it was building...
Third build, I guess?
Oh, man, and the worst actor in the world. I can't get over it. I mean...
It's
bad. Who was the guy in Little Buddha who had, like, the country western guy or something? There was a musician turned actor.
Oh, I don't... Yeah.
And I had troubles with him in that movie, but that guy is freaking Jack Nicholson compared to this dude, so...
The next movie we have is Waking Up in Reno, which I do not know. Our friend Holly Gore, who was just on a Cage Club episode, will be on that one. And then the two after that are sort of the two big ones, and maybe two of the first real big ones. After Waking Up in Reno, we have Italian Job and then Monster. Good stuff coming up, presumably. Ooh. I've still not seen Monster, but you won an Oscar for it. And I haven't seen the Italian Job since college, but I remember it being fun, so we'll see.
Mark Wahlberg's back. How's your mother?
Marky Mark.
What up? Got those good vibrations? That was his song back in the day.
So at the end, so this episode comes out March 30. So if we're going to plug another podcast, let's see here.
Can we do our newest of the new?
In the last month, I think we've talked about this on a couple other podcasts. I don't know if we talked about it here on Watch the Throne. We've added a couple more podcasts to the network. On March 1st, Real Bad officially joined our podcast network. They are putting out, they cover bad movies, but not in a way like How Did This Get Made does, where they just make fun of it. I mean, they do make fun of these movies, but they also look at them sort of constructively and try to fix them and talk about what they like about them, and then also leave you with a real good solution, or a real good recommendation. Like, if you wanted to see, like, so here's an example, Mike. If you wanted to see a kidnapping movie that was like this movie, but you don't want to watch Trapped, what would you recommend?
I'm on the spot now.
I'm going to say Man on Fire if you want to see another Dakota Fanning kidnap movie, because, again, I'm going to say that to you specifically. Go watch Man on Fire. You know, my favorite Denzel role, my favorite Denzel movie, where he's just like, I wish you had more time. It's wonderful. Like, if those guys on Wolf Pop didn't do Denzel Washington as the greatest actor of all time, period, and if I felt more qualified to talk about Denzel and his, you know, role in Hollywood, I would like to watch every Denzel movie, but that's already been done. We're not going to touch that. But anyway, my recommendation, my real good, is to go check out Man on Fire.
And I still haven't come up with one as you've been talking.
Uh-oh. Well, it could be like as they do on Real Bad. It could be, you know, anything. Like, is there another Kevin Bacon movie that you really like? Is there another Courtney Love thing that you really like?
Anything
you draw inspiration from.
Let's I want to go with the Courtney Love. Go check out, what's that Larry Flint movie now? The People versus Larry Flint, where she's in it, and Woody Harrelson plays Larry Flint, and she plays his wife, and they're amazing in that movie. Like, them together, like, it's a movie where two people are one performance. It's incredible. Like, they really have great chemistry. I really like that movie. I haven't seen it in a couple of years. I'm gonna go take my own advice and rewatch that very soon. So that's my recommendation.
So that was Real Bad. Go check that out. They have new episodes every Monday. It's a little bit of a grab bag, sort of like wistful thinking. I never know what's coming next, so go check that out. And then last but certainly not least, I saved it for last because you're on the show, the second episode coming out in 4 days, Third Time's a Charm. So earlier this month, you might have heard Mike and I talk about Superman 3. What is the next one? Is that Jaws 3D?
It is Jaws 3D. So get your 3D glasses and your ticket to SeaWorld, because we're heading to the water. I just want to remind everyone, if you hadn't heard before, the third dimension is actually terror. Be prepared. And my guest on that is Kara, who is co-host of Wistful Thinking. So,
who will actually be on the Monster episode in 3 weeks.
Oh, sweet.
So she will be here. So yeah, listen to that in 3 days or 4 days. And then come back in 3 weeks to listen to Kara there. And then also listen to Wistful Thinking, of course. When are you guys doing Godfather 3?
That'll be around August, I believe.
Oh, okay. So is that the season finale?
Well, maybe not. Things are happening. Things are shifting.
Oh, things are percolating.
I'm getting a little more ambitious.
Okay.
There's been some demand, believe it or not.
Wow, cool.
This show's only been out for barely a month, so.
And go check out, you guys have a Facebook page now. I mean, I don't know why I say you guys. Like,
I know, I do that too. On the show, I'm like, we all the time. I say we, but it's just me. Yeah, it's actually Third Time's a Charm page, because, you know, third times, like, everything was taken. So it's Third Time's a Charm page.
And if you just search it, you can find, if you know what the album art looks like from iTunes, that's the cover, or it's the profile picture, so you'll see that. You can just like the page from there. And find out news, like, just sharing stuff about, like, Bill and Ted 3, because it's, you know, why not?
Yeah, but as soon as the first show gets out there, I'm going to really start publishing just random news articles about all kinds of trilogies and part 3s, and that's basically what the feed's going to be about, is just part 3s of different movies and news about them, so come check us out.
And I said, I don't remember what I said, if it was on another one of our podcasts, or one maybe one with Joe that you haven't heard yet, but you creating your page for a podcast that doesn't really have an end date as much as the ones that you and I have done so far, aside from Cinemakers, inspired me and Joe to do our own Too Fast, Too Forever page, because we're like, hey, this one's going to go on forever. We might as well have a place where we can post dumb pictures and quotes and posters. I don't know if you saw the pictures I posted. Go back a month ago and listen to our Fast and Furious 4 episode. But the tagline for Fast and Furious was "New Model, Original Parts," and I was like, "That is so good."
What a way to reintegrate the like original, you know, cast and team back into the franchise. That's great.
I love it so much. It's so good. And then come back in 2 days and check out Fast 5, which is an episode that we have not recorded yet as of this recording, but which is my favorite Fast and Furious movie. I literally cannot wait to rewatch it. I love it so, so much. So check that out. But yeah, I don't think I told you this, Mike. I'm going to put this out in the internal newsletter. Okay. See, you guys are missing out on by not having shows on our network. Email us, mailbag@cageclub.me, if you have a show that you want to do. We now put out, over like a 4-week period, like when you factor, like, say a month is 4 weeks just for easy math.
Yeah.
We're putting out more than one podcast per day on average.
Oh, whoa. That's crazy.
Right?
All right.
I mean, I was going to say we started with one a week, but we did not start with one. We started with three a week for Cage, because that was
we couldn't go easy terrible. On ourselves, and you especially. Yep. I couldn't go easy on you.
When we quadrupled the shows to four, we added Keanu and Zach and Monkey Club, we were still only putting out like two a week. So like a Zach Attack every month. But like, yeah, I mean, we are now, I did the math, and I think if you factor in everything, the shows that have launched, I want to say like every 28 days or something, we put out like 33 shows.
Whoa, that's amazing.
Like it's a lot. Yeah.
That's just like,
it's a lot of stuff.
It is. And it's like way more than I realized. Like I'm kind of overwhelmed by that fact right now. Like just like 2015 this all started, and now it's like this machine that is become self-aware or something. It's got like it's working on its own. Like you and I are sort of, our hands are off the wheels now,
but I still find myself behind the mic on about half of those shows.
I know, really.
And you're on again another about half of them too, so we're not quite hands off. And
well, you've still got at least one hand on the wheel.
You are kicking it in co-pilot.
That's right.
But yeah, go check out cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, @cageclubpod on Twitter. You can also check out facebook.com/thirdtimescharmpage or Too Fast, Too Forever to check out those pages if you're into those podcasts. You can follow Real Bad Pod on Twitter, @RealBadPod. Just go check out everything. You know, we have all the links at our site, cageclub.me. There's a good chance, unless you are a super fan, that we have stuff on the network that you don't know about. So go check it out and, you know, let us know what you think. mailbag@cageclub.me, or if you want to email this show specifically, watch@cageclub.me, as in Watch the Throne. Any way you want to get in touch with us, thank you for listening. We are almost halfway through Watch the Throne. Soon, we're going to get to good movies. We are in a real dry spell, but there is light on the other side of the tunnel. At least, so here's the only thing I can say about this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not much of a compliment, but when you have a bad 80s movie, it feels extra bad. Here, it's still like relatively modern,
mm-hmm.
and so it's sort of like, it can almost trick you into thinking you're seeing something good, even though it's not. It looks nice for the most part, and like it has like modern techniques and stuff.
Yeah, the production value is high. Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. And like, this was a $30 million movie that made $13 million, so I mean, it flopped hard, but like they still put a bunch of money into it, so.
They tried to trick you.
Yes. So like, you know, sometimes bad movies, like Unreal Bad, are real bad. But sometimes they can kind of trick you into thinking like, oh, this isn't terrible. Like, that's just a movie that I would watch on HBO or whatever.
Right, right, right.
That might be a straight-to-DVD movie or whatever.
Did this go to theaters? This does not feel like it went to theaters.
It made $13 million in theaters.
Oh,
I mean,
wow. Okay,
you
so
Charlize
at,
like, sort of peak-ish power, and Kevin Bacon and Courtney Love. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you know, you have 2.5 star power in here. So, like, yeah. But yeah, cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, @cageclubpod on Twitter, mailbag@cageclub.me, or watch@cageclub.me. Just say hi. I don't care. We'll just read it on there. If you send the message in, we'll say hi. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll see you next time. Watch the Throne.